Well, this is one that you probably have not had a lot of dealings with, but it is included in most world religion textbooks, and it is important to realize, to know a little bit about, especially with as important as China is in the world nowadays. Confucianism is almost always listed as a world religion. Yet many do not consider it a religion in the classical sense. However, it is extremely influential. Its teachings influence many people groups in Asia to a greater or lesser extent, even today. These people groups include the Chinese, Japanese, Koreans, and Vietnamese. That may only be four nations, but that represents about 25% of the world population. A significant, I'll just give you a little bit about the historical context. A significant issue for the ancient Chinese was how to unite the various tribes who lived around the Yellow River. During the Chao Dynasty, which was from 1122 to 897 BC, the Duke of Chao attempted to solve this problem by establishing what was known as the ritual music culture. It was a rationalistic and humanistic in nature. The culture emphasized the need for harmony in human relationships. They wanted harmony in human relationships. It was believed music and rites could promote harmony. And I think that's something that, music. Culture, they do bring people together, right? If you can kind of get everybody buying into the same culture and music. And the hope was that this ritual music culture could bring harmony and integration to the different tribes and help them coexist with one another. The political goals of the ritual music culture were not completely realized. The problems of lack of unity continued right up to the 6th century. And listen to how terrible society was, according to religious historian Houston Smith. He says, by Confucius's day, however, the warfare had degenerated a long way from this code of chivalry toward horror of the period of the Warring States. The horror reached its height during the century following Confucius's death. The chariot, arm of the tournament, gave way to the cavalry with its surprise attacks and sudden raids. Instead of nobly holding their prisoners for ransom, conquerors put them to death in mass executions. Soldiers were paid upon presenting the cut-off heads of their enemies. Whole populations, unlucky enough to be captured, were beheaded, including women, children, and the aged. We read of mass slaughters of 60,000, 80,000, 82,000, and even 400,000. There are accounts of the conquered being thrown into boiling pots and their relatives forced to drink the human soup. So this was a society that needed harmony, and they were looking for any way to bring them together. So that's what Confucianism was trying to do, was bring about some harmony to this very nasty part of human history. Confucius, yeah. The person I was talking about before was a ruler. You don't have to know so much about that. Just know that there was a lot of disharmony going on during the time leading up to Confucius. That's all you have to know about that other, and you don't even have to know their name, Zhao. You don't really need to know about Zhao. It's just, things were so bad, thousands of people were being killed, even boiled. So yeah, not good times to live in leading up to this, to say the least. So into this really nasty world where there is no harmony, is born Confucius. And Confucius, you see his dates there, that'd be before Christ, 551 to 479 or thereabouts. Confucius believed China could be saved if people could live together in harmony. And the people, he felt, had to seek the good of others, which was a principle practiced, he felt, by their ancestors. He would not seek to create anything new, but would look to the past for answers. As a matter of fact, he would say, quote, "I transmit, but I do not create. I believe in and love the ancients." By Confucius's time, the culture had fallen apart, and social order was also in disharmony. Due to its collapse, people were looking for a way to reconstruct the ideal culture and political order. Confucius holds a very special place in Chinese tradition. However, very little is known about his life, at least for certain. While there are many stories and traditions related to his life, most were written well after his death and are not considered very reliable. However, there is enough information to get a general idea of his life. Confucius was born and given the name Chu King. His students later referred to him as King Fu Zhu, which means Kung the Master. And King Fu Zhu is Latinized into Confucius. He was the youngest of 11 children. This would have made him about 551 BC is when he was born. And this means he lived about the same time as Buddha, who we have already covered. And it is the time when the Israelites were in the Babylonian captivity. His family seems to have been of humble origins. And we have a quote from him declaring, "When I was young, I was out without rank and humble in circumstances." His father died when he was young, so his mother had to completely raise her on her own. When young, Confucius would engage in several activities, including hunting and fishing. But he declared when he reached the age of 15, he focused entirely on learning. Confucius held minor governmental jobs of collecting taxes. At the age of 20, he would marry and have a son and daughter. However, he would have a very brief marriage, which would end in divorce. In his early 20s, he would become a teacher, which would be the focus, his focus throughout his life. And he was considered an excellent teacher. And he impressed many people with the wisdom that he gave in his lectures. His fame spread, and a strong core of Confucian disciples would form. Confucius desired to change society for the better. However, to do so, he felt he needed to occupy a public office, which would allow him to put his theories into practice. Confucius would hold minor positions in government until, at age 50, he became a high official in Lu, which was the city of his birth. It's said that his moral reforms were successful, but he soon had a falling out with his superiors, and he would resign from his position. He would then spend the next 13 years wandering from state to state, attempting to put his reforms into practice. The last 5 years of his life would be dedicated to writing and editing his works, which formed the core of his teaching. Eventually, Confucius would be deified by his followers and by emperors in China. There would, for a time in Chinese history, be temples for the worship of Confucius, and animal sacrifices would be offered. So that was Confucius, and we'll get a little bit into his thought in a moment, but first, there's another important person you should know a little bit about in Confucianism, by the name of Mencius. And you see his dates there, 372 to 289. He would study with a disciple of Confucius's grandson. And he would clarify a question that Confucius left unclear. That is the basic nature of humanity. Mencius taught that humans were essentially good, which is now a basic presupposition of Confucian thought, that the nature of humanity is good. Mencius taught that the potentiality of the goodness of man can be equated with a natural flow of water. Water, he said, naturally flows downward, though it can be made to flow uphill or splashed and go above a person's head, but only when external force is applied. So humanity's nature is essentially good, but it can be forced into doing bad through applying external pressure. Mencius said, quote, "Man's nature is naturally good, just as water naturally flows downward. If you let people follow their feelings, they will be able to do good." This teaching is important for Christians to understand because it is the exact opposite of the biblical understanding of human nature in the present world. And this teaching has made it more difficult to proclaim the gospel in China, as well as other Asian countries influenced by Confucian thought. However, Confucius himself never clearly came down on the subject. In the second century BC, the emperor Han Wu Ti, you don't have to remember that name, adopted Confucianism as the official ideology of China, at the exclusion of all other ideologies. So this was to be the ideology of China as of the second century BC. You could only be part of the imperial court or a civil servant if you adhered to Confucianism. And a former professor of mine said you had to memorize all his works and pass an exam showing you had mastered his thought to be a civil servant. It was the dominant thought pattern and has influenced Chinese thought ever since. There have been times where it has taken second place to Buddhism, as well as syncretizing Buddhist thought with Confucianism, and a brief time where the communists suppressed it. But the philosophy of Confucianism has been the most influential outlook on life in China for almost 2,000 years. The most Confucius identified six ethical relationships which would transform Chinese thought and influence China and other Asian nations. These six relationships were the relationship between parent and child, ruler and minister, and by minister I mean, you have your ruler and then you have the people who are directly under him, government officials, relationships between government officials, husband and wife, older sibling and younger sibling, and friend and friend. The most important relationship was that of parent and child. Confucius taught that all these relationships were made possible by, quote, a compassionate, humane approach that incorporates a profound love. This broad principle requires only a single word for expression in Chinese, and that word is zhen, and we'll get to that. I'll have it written down for you in your PowerPoints. Also, essential to Confucianism is li, or seamlessly proper conduct between parties. Jin is the compassion and humanity arising from genuine love. Jin is the compassion and humanity arising from genuine love. Li is correct ritualistic etiquette-based behavior between individuals. Jin expresses itself in what is known as Cheng, and that is faithfulness to oneself. But such faithfulness is to not be misunderstood as being self-absorbed. Confucianism depends on attention to moral duties befitting a son or daughter. The moral ideal in Confucianism is exemplified by what is known as Cheng Zhu. Once again, at the end, you will have these definitions. Or noble truth. Regarding their sources of authority, the Analects is the most important work in Confucianism. The Analects. However, they were not written by Confucius himself, and they were not really considered that important until the 2nd century AD. The book was written by his followers, and the book consists of the sayings and stories related to Confucius, recorded by his followers shortly after his death. The core of the teachings is that if people, quote, pursue courtesy, correct form and etiquette, reverence, and humane benevolence with each of the 6 human relationships, harmony will exist at every level of society. So you're trying to basically treat each other in a way that harmony can occur. And you try to do that within those 6 relationships. And if you do that, the good result will happen. People will, be in harmony. Society will be in harmony. The work also stresses the importance of the virtuous conduct of the ruler of the state. The work stresses the importance of the virtuous conduct of the ruler of the state. He believed that the moral conduct of the ruler affected the entire nation. So you needed, the highest, you've probably heard that in leadership, right? You've got to set the example. Well, he very much believed in that. For Confucius, the perfect human being would combine the roles of sage, noble, and scholar. It was not appropriate to be a ruler whose aims revolved around power and personal aggrandizement. The family structure was seen as the environment in which virtue could be developed, which would benefit all society. He saw society in a hierarchy and proper interactions within it as necessary to harmony. And society, in a sense, was seen as an extension of the family. And this emphasis on the family structure, what it should be pointed out, was not an endorsement of rigid social roles. Rather, it sees the family as a series of constantly shifting relationships. One must be a child, for example, before one becomes a parent. Each of life's roles must be accompanied by appropriate discipline, regard for form, and ethical communication. An example of his teaching regarding judging others is as follows. So this is an example of his teaching. The gentleman, quote, the gentleman calls attention to the good points in others. He does not call attention to their defects. The small man does just the reverse of this. So in this work, he is also teaching you how to interact with one another, how to live in harmony with one another. Other than the Analects, there are several other Confucian books. Confucius and his followers sought either to develop or accept several important works. They are divided into the five classics and the four books. So they either put these together or looked for them to be accepted as important in Confucianism. The five classics, which were written before Confucius's time, though he endorsed, were the following. The one called the Book of Changes, or I Ching, which is a book of divination or telling the future. It basically tells you ways to tell the future, how a leaf drops from a tree and so forth, kind of things. Then there is the Book of History, the Book of Poetry, the Book of Rites, the Spring and Autumn Annals. Next, there were the four books. And the four books have works which include works by Confucius and Mencius, as well as their followers. And these are the fundamental teachings of early Confucianism. And these are the Analects, which we just discussed, a book called The Great Learning, The Doctrine of the Mean, and the Book of Mencius, which talks about Mencius's ideas, as we discussed, highlighting the nature of humanity being good. So what are some beliefs of Confucianism? Well, one belief is ancestor worship. Ancestor worship is a part of Chinese religions in general and was very widespread during the time of Confucius. Ancestor worship is the veneration of the spirits of ancestors by living relatives. The system holds the belief that for the ancestors to continue to exist, they must be given attention by their living relatives. Ancestors are also thought to be able to control the fortunes of living relatives. If the ancestors are honored, well, good things will follow you. If they are neglected, bad things may happen to their families. This often led some to fear their ancestors. Honoring them included practices such as placing food and wine in front of their homes for their ancestral spirits and ghosts on the day known as the Festival of the Hungry Ghosts, as well as keeping the spirits informed about what was going on in the family. By letting them know what's going on in the family's life, this was supposedly something that would soothe the spirits and make it possible for them to rest in peace. So you're supposed to keep them up on what was going on in the world of living. There is also the belief in filial piety. And what that means is devotion to the older members of the family by the younger members of the family. And this was especially emphasized with the relationship between a father to a son, or excuse me, a son to a father. Loyalty to family was also part of this system and was given the highest priority in Confucian life. Children were expected to love their parents when alive and grieve for them when dead. Also, you were expected to care for them. Confucius said the following in the Analects. The master said, "A young man should be a good son at home and an obedient young man abroad, sparing of speech, but trusting in what he says. And he should love the multitude at large but cultivate the friendship of his fellow men." Meng Wu Po asked about being filial. The master said, "Give your father and mother no cause for anxiety than illness." So a very strong sense of devotion to family and devotion to father, devotion to mother. The last quote is showing you shouldn't bring shame on them or give them reason for worry. Okay, a little bit about their doctrines. And these I mentioned a little bit earlier. Zhen, that is, doctrines of Confucianism are summarized in these six terms. Zhen, benevolence. This is how we are to relate to other human beings. And it is basically the golden rule that Jesus gave in a negative form. And some religious scholars, knowing Jesus' statement and calling it the golden rule, will refer to this as the silver rule. It is, do not do unto others as you would not have them do to you. That is Zhen. Then there is Chun Zhu, the gentleman or man of virtue. This is the goal towards Zhen. You're supposed to live in that manner. Chen Ming is the idea that everyone should play their proper part in society and do it well. Whatever it is you do, whatever your part of society is, you do it and you do it well. Day, which is power. The concept is that physical power is not enough for someone to rule well. A ruler must not only be physically powerful, but also a person of virtue that inspires their followers. The fifth is Li. In many ways, this means the ideal code of conduct which one lives out. Wen relates to the culture of the arts of peace, or the arts of peace. These include music, poetry, art, and other things. To reject these arts as important was to reject the virtues of both humanity and heaven. So just a few other things to note. What does Confucianism believe about the supernatural? Well, Confucianism is not a religion in the sense of how humanity is to relate to God. It deals more with how people relate to one another. Confucius focused mostly on life on earth. He felt it was harmful to focus too much on heaven. When pushed on this point by a disciple to discuss his views on how to treat the spirits of the dead and how the gods should be served, he replied, quote, "You are not able to serve man. How can you serve the spirits?" Unquote. The questioner went on saying, "May I ask about death?" Quote, "You do not understand even life. How can you understand death?" So obviously you are supposed to focus on the here and now, on life on this earth, is what Confucius is saying. Now, it should be pointed out that he did occasionally talk about heaven, but heaven seems to have been equated with essentially how the natural order worked and not God per se. Another good question is Confucianism a religion? Well, Confucianism has been listed both as a philosophy and as a religion. Those who follow it as a strict religion are less than 5 million people. Those who worship Confucius, for instance. But it has great influence due to its philosophy, which affects much of Asia. While it is focused is life on earth, it does take on religious underpinnings because it deals with the ultimate concerns of humanity. Houston Smith says the following: in each of these great features of early Chinese religion, its sense of continuity with ancestors, its sacrifice, and its augury, that is trying to figure out how to tell the future, there is a common emphasis. The emphasis was on heaven instead of earth. To understand the total dimensions of Confucianism as a religion, it is important to see Confucius, A, shifting the emphasis from heaven to earth, without dropping heaven out of the picture entirely. So he took a culture that was focused more on heaven and took it to a culture more focused on earth. But he did not drop the heaven completely. That's what that's saying. So understand Confucianism as a religion that focuses more on earthly manners, while at the same time it assumes heavenly matters to be real and not imaginary. Just briefly, a little bit about comparing Confucianism with Christianity. Confucianism, like a lot of religions, has much in it that is praiseworthy. It values relationships and virtue. I like that when I go through it. I like the idea of harmony in relationships. However, it is very much focused on self-effort and does not focus on God in significant ways. And it looks at the concept of God as almost unimportant in the present life. So there is not really an idea of relationship with God. So I guess in Christian language, we would say that they're focusing completely, almost completely on the second commandment, love your neighbor as yourself, but forgetting the first one, to love God with all that you are. Part of the Confucian thought, since the time of Mencius, involved viewing humanity as essentially good, while the Bible views humanity apart from God as sinful. It does not see a reason for a savior per se. So whether it's Confucianism or not, indeed there are Christians, I should say people who profess Christianity, who believe that truly humans are good, you know, that they think that that's the way what Christianity teaches. It's not, but they think that. And when you have this issue, that's always a barrier, right? Because why do I even need a savior? Very liberal Christians believe that when you get down to it, you ask, why do I need a savior? And there's really no good answer for that unless you take the Bible as what it says, you know, that we're sinful, we need a savior. Some of the philosophy of Confucianism is good regarding ethics. But as a religion, and even some of the underpinnings of its philosophy, such as no strong focus on God or an eternal relationship with God, means we need to reject it as a religion and hopefully lead others who hold similar views in our societies to do the same and accept the gospel message. So that's a little bit about Confucianism. It kind of blurs the line between religion and worldview, but it is generally listed as a world religion. Regardless, it is a worldview that affects millions, billions of people in our world, and you should be aware of it. And if nothing else, be aware of the fact that that's one barrier you often have when you're talking about your faith with someone. Just even at the office, in a casual conversation, people sometimes are coming from the perspective that humanity is generally good, that our impulses are good. So if I want to do something, why stop me? I generally have good impulses. And also, even in some churches, more liberal churches that you will come across, the focus will be on loving your neighbor as yourself and really not focusing at all on God. They wouldn't put it that way, but really that's how it plays out. So be aware of those impulses in religion. Any questions or comments? All right, very briefly, I'll go over just, I had a good question about paper. As you know, you have a paper that you will need to do that's listed in your syllabus. I will talk a little bit more about this our last class session, which is on Saturday. But something to be aware of, in writing this paper, I am asking you to do one specific part of a religion, not the entire religion. So, for instance, if you choose Islam, do not don't explain every part of Islam for me. You know, their faith, what they believe, their practices, and all of that. What I'm looking for, and their history, what I'm looking for is find one specific thing about that religion you're interested in. For instance, in Islam, there's something called the five pillars of Islam. Tell me what they are and go into detail about what those five pillars include. Or you can tell me Islam's view of God. What do they believe about God? If it's Mormonism, well, what do Mormons believe about salvation? Don't give me the entire history of Mormonism. There are, you know, several of their beliefs and several of their practices. It would be too large a topic. You could write a book on such things. Well, you could write a book on any of these things, but still, it's more narrow than that. I'll discuss a little bit more about that last time we meet, that paper, more detail. But does that make sense? Don't do the entire religion. Do just one specific doctrine or practice or specific thing about their history. Yes.
So we focus only on this specific thing, but should we also compare it with Christianity? That in Christianity, this is this way they believe.
Yes, that is part of it too, and that part's in the syllabus. And I'll discuss it further, but yes, that's also important. Tell how it is similar or different than Christianity.